Greetings and welcome to the Gloucester Daily Times for Monday, April 13th, 2026, brought to you by the Talking Information Center, located in beautiful Marshfield, Massachusetts. This is your reader, George Krein. Today's lead story, Applied Materials Expanding. New buildings planned, more workers to be hired. It's written by Bobby Grady. One of Gloucester's largest employers, Applied Materials, is preparing to expand its Blackburn Industrial Park facility and plans on taking down the two wind turbines in the process. Applied Materials is one of the nation's largest producers of semiconductors, with locations, much like the campus in Blackburn Industrial Park, across the world. Specifically, the company manufactures the equipment needed to produce microchips. These are the Intel, Sony, Samsung kind of companies, said Matthew Beach, director of Semiconductor Products Group for the company's Gloucester location. They make the microchips. We provide them with the equipment. Applied Material has several buildings in Blackburn Industrial Park, with the main location being at 35 Dory Road. The company is seeking a special permit to exceed the 35-foot limit on height in the industrial park as it looks to build a three-level addition that would be 50 feet high at 35 Dory Road. The request is on the City Council's consent agenda for referral to the Planning and Development Committee for its meeting at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday in Kairou's Auditorium at City Hall 9 Dale Avenue. Applied Materials also purchased the property at 11 Dory Road last year, where it plans on constructing a new building to house its logistics operations. We manage a lot of our incoming supply chain through all these different buildings within the Blackburn Industrial Park, which works perfectly fine, but as we grow larger, we want to be more efficient and have everything in one spot, Beach said. Another reason the company is looking to consolidate its logistics is to expand its manufacturing facilities on the site, Beach said. The company is looking to increase manufacturing due to an ever-growing demand for computer chips. Beach said the project is still in the design phase and exact specifications are being worked out, but construction could begin as early as the end of this year or the beginning of 2027. To make room for the expansion, the company will decommission the two wind turbines visible from the rotaries. In early January, Mayor Paul Lundberg announced the 25-year agreement between the city and Equity Industrial Turbines, LLC, would be ending early. Applied Materials assumed the agreement and its rights and liabilities that gave Gloucester access to the energy the turbines generated after purchasing 11 Dory Road. The company agreed to pay the city $587,000, the estimated benefit the city would have received for the generated energy in fiscal years 2026, 2027, and 2028. In 2012, the city entered into a 25-year power purchase agreement with Equity Industrial Turbines for the kilowatt hours generated by the wind turbines. In 2025, Applied Materials acquired 11 Dory Road and assumed the rights and liabilities of the turbines. The details and timeline of decommissioning the two turbines are also still being worked out, according to Beach. He said there are a lot of moving parts, so to speak, to get them decommissioned, such as weather and when they can be disconnected from the energy grid. Beach said Applied Materials' new buildings will be, quote, solar ready, meaning solar panels could be put on the roofs. The company also expects its Gloucester workforce to increase from the approximately 1,400 employees it has. Beach said it is difficult to estimate what the number of employees will grow to, but when the business grows, the employees grow, and we source locally as much as possible. The Santa Clara, California-based Applied Materials is working with Apple and Texas Instruments to bolster the semiconductor manufacturing supply chain in the United States. Applied Materials says it has the largest U.S.-based manufacturing footprint among semiconductor equipment providers, with production facilities in Gloucester, Montana, and Texas. Hunger reaching new heights on Cape Ann. It's written by Bobby Grady. The Open Door recently reported seeing its highest request for food assistance ever in 2025, following recent trends on the North Shore and across the state. The Gloucester-based food pantry, which serves 13 local communities, reported a 36% increase in requests for food assistance from 2024 to 2025. This is the highest single-year increase the pantry has seen, according to the Open Door president and CEO Julie LaFontaine. The rise follows 30% increases in both 2023 and 2024. I think the data tells the story of people who are really struggling to make ends meet, LaFontaine said. It represents a gap between wages and the actual cost of living. Through the first 3 months of this year, LaFontaine said, the Open Door has served a similar number of people as 2025. Throughout 2025, the agency's pantries in Gloucester and Ipswich distributed 2.48 million pounds of food to 12,780 people in Gloucester, Rockport, Manchester-by-the-Sea, Ipswich, Raleigh, Topsfield, Boxford, Hamilton, Wenham, and Georgetown, the highest, LaFontaine said. The Open Door has ever seen across 5,718 households. The most common food distributed was fresh produce, which made up 34% of all food distributed. The pantries have been increasing services to keep up with the growing demand for help by adding hours and increasing the grocery appointment capacity twice in 2025. The Open Door has also strengthened and added mobile markets in high-need areas in Danvers and Lynn, while deepening partnerships with organizations across the North Shore. LaFontaine said 61% of the pantry's food comes from the Greater Boston Food Bank, and the Open Door is, quote, tapping every bit of food that is available there, purchasing wholesale items from local vendors, and accepting donations from the community to keep shelves stocked. Last year, the Open Door also saw a record high 3,022 SNAP assistance program appointments to help people maximize their food resources. SNAP is the new name for what used to be called food stamps. And the added services are reflected in the volunteer hours. LaFontaine said there are over 2,000 active volunteers and a core group of around 700 regular volunteers who put in the majority of the recorded 29,688 hours volunteered. She said the increased need for assistance does put a strain on the pantries, but it is also an opportunity to reevaluate. It's an opportunity for us to double down on core programs and look at all of our systems and distribution models to be sure that they are as efficient and get food to the most amount of people, she said. But the increasing need for food assistance is not unique to the North Shore. The Greater Boston Food Bank and Mass General Brigham recently released the sixth annual Massachusetts Food Access Report, which detailed food insecurity across the Commonwealth. According to the report, 40% of households, or about 1.1 million people statewide, experienced food insecurity last year, and 700,000 people experienced very low food insecurity, meaning they are skipping meals or not eating due to not being able to afford food. In Essex County, 43% of households experienced food insecurity, a 9% increase from last year, according to the report. The Open Door also reported its thrift store, Second Glance, saw an increase in use as well. In 2025, the store sold 361,720 donated items, recycled 216 tons of textile, shoes, and hard goods, and provided 182 referrals to get people in need free household items. Demolition delay proposed, it's written by Bobby Grady. The Gloucester Historical Commission will be before the City Council on Tuesday to advocate for its proposal to create a demolition delay ordinance to protect historically significant houses in the city. An overview of the proposal will be presented by the Commission at the City Council's meeting beginning at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, that's tomorrow, in Kairouz Auditorium at City Hall, 9 Dale Avenue. Members of the public may attend either in person or online using the link on the council's agenda. Commission member Suzanne Morreale said the proposed ordinance aims to allow the city to postpone the demolition of houses built between 1600 and 1899 that developers and property owners are looking to tear down. If the ordinance gets approved, the commission would then be able to review any house built in that time frame. that developers are looking to demolish and determine if the house is worth preserving. The review process would include using information from MACRIS, a state database, containing a variety of information on historic places across the Commonwealth, a connection to the important historical figures, any architectural, cultural, or social importance to the city, and determining if the house is on any national landmark lists. Morreale said if the commission determines a house is worth preserving, it would make a recommendation to the city council, who approves or denies it. If the council approves the commission's recommendation, demolition is delayed for 12 months while an alternative is sought. If no alternative is found within 12 months, the house can be torn down. A number of criteria would prevent the commission from recommending a house be preserved, Morreale said. These include poor condition and safety concerns, the architecture is no longer notable, and no important historical figures live there. Morreale said the building commission will step in and determine if and when a building should come down if there are safety concerns. Unlike other nearby municipalities such as Salem, Beverly, and Ipswich, Gloucester does not currently have a demolition delay ordinance. Morreale said certain similar ordinances have been proposed in the past but have all been shot down because opponents argued the ordinance hindered housing development too much. She said past proposals included delaying demolition on all houses in the city that were 100 years old, which is about half of the 10,000 housing structures across the city. To address this, Morreale altered the most current proposal to only include houses built between 1600 and 1899, of which there are about 1,100. Part of what is driving the proposal is the lack of houses in the city that have some sort of historic restriction on them. Morreale said there are only 92 housing structures across the city that have a historic deed restriction on them, meaning they cannot be torn down due to their historic significance. In recent years, Morreale said one house built within the proposed ordinance's time frame has been torn down per year. And wrapping up the front page, Rockport backs article to curb Trump and seasonal community designation. It's written by Stephen Hagan. Annual town meeting brought hundreds of resident voters to Rockport High School on Saturday to decide financial, zoning, and other questions on the 24-article warrant. After lengthy discussion, the meeting accepted the seasonal community designation offered by the state and backed a non-binding citizen petition aimed at sanctioning President Donald Trump for his military action in Iran and its policies on immigration. The meeting was relatively succinct. Town moderator Brian Sullivan banging the gavel to start the proceedings precisely at 8:30 and adjourned it at 12:29 p.m. Meeting members weighed the pros and cons of Article L, the seasonal community designation, and eventually supporting it. Toby Arsenian said designation was not necessarily right for Rockport. Is it worth having the seasonal community's designation, he asked. What will we get? We're putting the cart before the horse. We're blundering into a marsh. According to the state, seasonal communities may acquire year-round housing occupancy restrictions and develop housing with a preference for municipal workers so that public safety personnel, teachers, public works employees, and other town employees can afford a place to live. Also, the designation allows the creation of housing for artists and permits the construction of so-called tiny homes to be built and used as year-round housing. Besides Rockport so far, 43 other towns and cities have agreed to the designation by the Massachusetts Executive Office of Housing and Livable Communities. But how the designation plays out in Rockport is still to be determined, Planning Board Chair Jason Shaw said. According to the provisions of the state initiative, jurisdictions have 2 years to determine the specific direction they will want to take before the designation potentially lapses. The law is too recent to have data on it, Shaw said. The meeting also approved Article P, the non-binding citizens measure that calls on the U.S. Congress to exercise its legislative authority as a check against Trump's, quote, unlawful or unconstitutional actions. Before the debate on the article commenced, Sullivan cautioned residents to exercise civil dialogue. Civil discourse out here on this island is important, he said. Debate ran the gamut with some urging support and others saying it went beyond the scope of town meeting. In the end, the vote it was approved by a vote of 140 to 27. Article P is part of a grassroots effort, lead petitioner Christine Downing said. Some voters said the article is too partisan and not appropriate for town meeting consideration. I don't happen to think that this is partisan, Amy Seabrook said. Monica Lawton said free expression is appropriate. It's up to the people in the town to express their view on these issues. I see nothing wrong with people expressing themselves. Also approved were an acceptance of the authorization of an annual increase in the amount of real estate tax exemption granted under state law. Accept the establishment of a deadline of 48 weekday hours prior to the filing deadline to obtain nomination papers for town office and require candidates to provide a written statement containing their name, office address, and office they would be seeking. Allow a real estate tax exemption. Listen up for this. Allow a real estate tax exemption for qualifying blind persons. I'll say that again. This is in Rockport. Allow a real estate tax exemption for qualifying blind persons. Increase the real estate exemption for qualifying seniors from $500 to $1,000 and reduce the eligibility age from 70 to 65. Allow qualifying seniors to enter into a tax deferral and recovery agreement and increase the allowable income limit under the circuit breaker state tax credit. Stolen Gloucester truck found in Peabody Pond, turned by Carolyn Enos. A pickup truck that was stolen out of a driveway in Gloucester was found submerged in Brown's Pond in Peabody on Friday morning, Peabody police said. The 2022 Chevy Silverado 1500 Trail Boss showed up in the pond after 1 a.m. Friday when the truck was driven or pushed over the pond's barrier and left in the water, Peabody Police Captain David Bonfanti said. The truck's owner walked into the Gloucester Police Station around 2:18 a.m. Friday to report the 2022 pickup had been stolen from his driveway, according to interim Gloucester Police Chief Michael Williams. Williams said Gloucester Police issued an alert to area agencies giving a description of the vehicle and license plate. The truck was first spotted in the pond located in South Peabody and reported to Peabody Police around 6:30 a.m., Bonfanti said. With help from the Beverly Fire Department, dive rescue team, and the use of a drone, first responders searched the truck and the pond for any potential victims, but no one was found in the water, he said. Neighbors shared home security footage with police to assist in the investigation. The cameras did not reveal any footage of the truck or the incident, and officers have no suspects in the case as of late Friday morning. There are no known injuries stemming from the incident. First responders found minimal damage, mainly tire tracks, to the green space around the pond. Gloucester Police Department said Friday morning they could not share the address or neighborhood from where the truck was stolen as the investigation remains ongoing. Son of former Bruins goalie charged with, quote, romance scam, is written by Dave Rogers. Newburyport. Robert Cheevers, the son of retired Boston goaltender renowned Jerry Cheevers, faces a charge of larceny over $1,200 in what was called a romance scam after the victim told local police he stole more than $48,000 from her, according to Newburyport District Court records. The 57-year-old North Andover resident was arraigned Wednesday in the same courthouse. Judge Francis Dahlmeier ordered him held on $2,500 cash bail. He's due back in court April 29 for a pretrial hearing. Court records show Robert Cheevers was in a Worcester County jail at the time of his arraignment, having been arrested on a similar offense by the Leicester Police Department. He also has an active arrest warrant out of Las Vegas, according to court records. Should the younger Cheever post bail related to the Newburyport charge, it is likely he will remain in custody based on the active warrant. A phone call to Robert Cheever's attorney, Stephen Johnson, was not returned before publication. Jerry Cheevers was in net when the Bruins won the Stanley Cup in 1970 and 1972, playing alongside fellow Hockey Hall of Famers Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito, and Johnny Busick. He retired in 1980 after a second stint with the Bruins. Newburyport police officer Travis Weil, in his report, said that during a period of roughly 18 months, Robert Cheevers repeatedly solicited the victim for money, all while pretending to be employed. The victim stated the mode that the money was stolen through was Venmo transactions and accrued interest of credit cards needed to be used because of the money loaned to him, Wiles' report reads. Mr. Cheevers was aware of that, and he verbally agreed to pay that back as well. The victim went on to tell Wiles that Robert Cheevers claimed his assets had been frozen by the Massachusetts Department of Revenue for back payment owed, and that once he cleared up that matter, she would be paid back in full. Later, he admitted to her that he had a gambling problem. According to the victim, Robert Cheevers solicited money not only from her, but from her brother and others so he could buy Bruins and concert tickets that were never delivered. As previously stated, there were other investigations involving Mr. Cheevers scamming people out of money, Wiles wrote in his report. In one such investigation, the Andover Police Department is looking into claims made by a woman who said Robert Cheevers scammed her out of $2,000 by asking for money to buy New England Patriots and Bruins tickets but never delivering. The woman who told police she was in a relationship with the suspect said he asked her to send him money via Venmo to buy the tickets with the understanding he would pay her back, according to Wiles' report. The girlfriend stated she continually asked for the money back and Cheevers continued to promise her that he would pay her back, but never did, Wiles wrote in his report. Andover police spoke to Cheevers and he stated he would pay the money back. The money was never paid back and more excuses were used. Andover police eventually presented the matter to Andover District Court. A clerk there ruled there was enough probable cause to proceed with criminal charges. A recent check of his criminal record showed a continued without finding with restitution that was due with an end date of August 5, 2026, Wiles wrote in his report. Wiles went on to write that it was clear to him that Robert Cheevers had no intention of paying back the Newburyport victim. Mr. Cheevers has lied and conned many people out of money with many false promises, Wiles wrote in his report. Many times we deal with, quote, romance scams conducted over the internet, but Cheevers is actually in person betraying and lying to all those he interacts with to get money that benefits Cheevers only. $17,000 in grants support students. It's written by Stephen Hagen, Manchester by the Sea. Public funding for schools is critical to students' learning, but a bit of private financing doesn't hurt. The Manchester by the Sea-based Spalding Education Fund recently awarded 7 new grants to the Manchester Essex Regional School District, totaling almost $17,000, all for school projects ranging from fieldwork and hands-on science to student wellness initiatives and community STEAM events. Projects span all grade levels. The grants will help fund the district's annual STEAM Night, a community's event celebrating student innovation in science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics, hence the acronym STEAM. The Elementary Comfort Closet, which provides school children with stigma-free access to hygiene and wellness items. The Land and Sea Team Building and Learning Adventure. This 2-day hands-on educational experiences introduces fifth graders to the Essex Shipbuilding Museum. Expansion of the school district's sustainable food production and perennial gardening projects. Creation of an ACE indoor-outdoor garden to be managed by high school students in the district academic and communication enhancement special education program. A 9th-grade field trip to the Museum of Science in Boston that focuses on real-world applications of math and programming. Programming from Kestrel Educational Adventures, which will bring hands-on environmental science to all 1st through 4th graders. What's exciting about these grants is how they connect students to learning in meaningful ways, Spalding Educational Fund Grants Coordinator Lisa Manginiello said. They create opportunities for exploration, creativity, and real-world experiences that make learning more memorable and impactful. Projects funded by nearly $16,000 in the fall of 2025, grant cycle totals, were a garden learning initiative, which has encouraged students to participate in seed collection and garden stewardship, according to Betsy McKean, communication chair for the Spalding Education Fund. She also said the purchase of podcasting equipment has been used to help 8th graders develop interviewing, speaking, and public engagement skills. The Spalding Education Foundation operates without an endowment and relies on community support to fund teacher-driven projects in the Manchester-Essex Regional School District. The fall 2026 grant cycle opens in September, and district faculty are encouraged to apply. We have time for a letter to the editor, Cape Ann Cultural Bright Spot. In a season often defined by cold, damp, and gray days, something remarkable unfolded on Cape Ann, a vibrant collaboration that deserves recognition and continued support. The newly emerging Cape Ann Guitar Society, led by founder and president Brendan Evans, joined forces with the long-established Rocky Neck Art Colony to present a series of concerts and workshops this March. The response was nothing short of extraordinary, with shows selling out, a clear testament to the quality of the performances and the community's hunger for meaningful artistic experiences. The final week was Saturday, March 29, promising our audiences another intimate and inspiring concert along with an engaging workshop. These events were not only reasonably priced, but delivered a richness that far exceeded their cost. What made this series especially powerful was the setting, surrounded by Amy Sidarsky's evocative Women, a collection of nude portraits spanning the last decade. The Rocky Neck Art Cultural Center became more than a venue. It transformed into a living dialogue between visual and musical art. The experience was immersive, reflective, and in many ways, restorative. The musicians, including Berkeley artist Daniel Vieja, Jason Jai, local talent Steve Lacey and Andrew Cohen, brought not only technical excellence but a deep sense of humanity to their performances. Their work resonates on a personal level, reminding us of the essential role art plays in connecting and uplifting a community. I encourage everyone to help ensure that this exciting partnership becomes a lasting part of Cape Ann's cultural identity, and it's written by Joseph R. Gallo, Jr. of Gloucester. As always, thanks so much for listening. Please be sure to join us again tomorrow for another edition of the Gloucester Daily Times. Have a great evening.